Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Traffic Modeling Department here at Car Talk Plaza. And we pose the question, how bad are Boston drivers really?
Well, you ever read Chet Ramel?
Yes, I do.
Is he a genius or what?
He has a good editor.
Chet Ramel.
No, he's good. In fact, I have one of his astronomy books, which is very good.
This article is entitled Drivers Take Byte, B-Y-T-E, Out of Computer. And he describes in great literary detail the computer model that models traffic. Because the paper ran a story about a model developed by MIT. And he says, this isn't the first attempt to model Boston traffic on a computer. An earlier effort by researchers at Washington Institute of Technology was abandoned when their computer unexpectedly blew up. And he says, to find out what happened, I visited the defunct project's ex-coordinator, Crash Gordon, at WIT. And he describes what happened, that they had this model that worked everywhere in the country. And then they tried to apply the model to Boston. He said, we sent observers to Boston to survey traffic patterns. We took psychological profiles of hundreds of typical drivers. We created a mathematical model of the Boston road system. Then we started up the machine. He says, the first things went well. Traffic moved smoothly along Storer Drive, the Tobin Bridge, blah, 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 blah. Then we started plugging in the peculiar Bostonian features. Such as, I asked.
Big noses.
Such as rotaries. Oh. He says, we didn't have any experience with rotaries. The computer kept getting hung up. Blips of the screen went around and around and around. If they couldn't get on or off. He says, I knew we were in trouble when we added emergency vehicles to the model, which we represented on the screen as flashing orange blips. As an orange blip moved at an accelerated pace through four lanes of traffic, other blips darted in behind, as if they were trying to get the jump on their fellow driver.
Yes, I've seen that phenomenon.
He says, I had never seen anything like this before. First, we thought something was wrong with the computer. Slowly, we realized our queuing models were faulty. Queuing in the Boston profile was non-existent. The blips on the screen would use any stratagem to get to the front of the pack. Emergency vehicles, breakdown lanes, even sidewalks if they wanted to. The same for merging lanes. In other parts of the country, drivers in adjacent merging lanes take turns. With the Boston data, blips jammed together bumper to bumper, blocking any blip that wanted to merge. Intersections, the blips packed into intersections as traffic lights changed to yellow and red, even if the egress was blocked, thereby bringing traffic in all directions to a standstill. He says, Gordon, Crash Gordon lit up a cigarette. I noticed his hand was shaking. This isn't great. And then he adds up. He says, when we added yield signs, that's when the computer blew. Burned out the main processing chips. And that's when the contract was canceled, I asked. Right, said Gordon. But to tell you the truth, none of us at WIT was sorry. We repaired the machine. We now have a contract with Atlanta. And everything's going along fine.
Well, of course. So they don't need it in Atlanta.
Well, I mean, it is nice to have a computer model, but it's obvious why it doesn't work in Boston, because Boston drivers are hopeless.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Laura Willingham in Alexandria, Virginia.
Laura?
Yes?
And did you give us your last name?
Yes.
You fool.
Are you crazy?
I'm a maniac.
I thought you were from Virginia.
I am.
Oh, maniacs are from Maine.
Hey, okay, and here's my deal.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a GMC Jimmy. That's two-door model, so people can't get in the back seat. You know that deal.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, so your in-laws won't come to visit.
Well,
right?
Here's the deal. And you guys are from, like, a cold weather climate. So it's been, like, frightfully cold here this winter. I mean, like, really, like, 2 degrees Kelvin.
Yeah.
You know, all winter. And that's that thermometer for smart people, and I really don't know what that means.
Right.
The deal is, I go out to my truck one day, and the tires look low. Like, the front tires look low.
Yeah, sure,
so
they would.
I was like, well, what do I do about this? So, of course, being the single woman that I am, I called my dad. And
good.
I said,
Yeah, this is it. Wait, this is
the deal. And
what did he say?
Seems as how I'm a college graduate, I figured, well, air contracts and expands.
Good.
Okay, I know that much about physics.
That's good.
So maybe I need to put more air in the tires. And my dad says, no. No, don't be stupid.
Don't be stupid.
You have the same amount of air in your tires all year long. So that's my question. Am I supposed to put more air in my tires in the wintertime? They look low.
Yeah, you're supposed.
What is that deal? What if you get a really warm day and, like, the winter will explode?
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, your tire pressure is supposed to be seasonally adjusted.
Ah.
Like mortgages, right? What do they do?
Yeah.
What else gets seasonally adjusted?
ARMs.
Oh, yeah.
No, because in fact, your tire pressure will drop about a pound for every 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
Or Kelvin.
Yeah, there you go.
Temperature drops.
No, not Kelvin. Every 10 degrees Fahrenheit that the temperature drops, you lose a pound of pressure. So if your tire pressure was supposed to be 30, I don't know what it's supposed to be in this thing.
I don't know what it's supposed to be either.
Well, yeah, whatever it was supposed to be, it ain't anymore.
If you put the air that it came with,
I don't know.
Whatever it came with, yeah. But if it came with the summer, for example, when it was 80 degrees outside.
Oh, yeah, I bought it in May.
And it went down to 2 degrees Kelvin, as you said.
Yeah.
That's a drop of 80 degrees, so it would have gone down 8 PSI.
Yeah.
So it would then have, on that morning that you looked at it, instead of 30 PSI, 22.
Yeah. I suspect, however, that you would hardly have noticed the difference between 30 and 22.
That's right.
I'll tell you why I know this. The other day, I had the occasion to drive my Dodge Colt Vista to work again.
Yeah.
And on the way, I had to stop for gas because the light was flashing. I had one of those lights, I didn't know that says low fuel, stupid. And I said, geez, I just put gas in like 2 months ago. I don't know what's the matter. And when I got to the shop, I noticed as I got out that my tires were very low.
Yeah.
And I said, that's why I'm getting such lousy mileage, because my tire pressure is very low. But they weren't empty. I mean, they were low. I figured, well, they need a few pounds. They were like down to 5 pounds apiece.
Exactly. So I agree. It is very unlikely that if the air pressure went from 30 PSI to 22, that you would have seen that. Because they don't look flat until they're empty.
So the answer is your father is wrong. You should fill them up.
Yes.
And you should put them.
Wrong?
Your father is wrong. He's wrong.
Are you doing this on national radio?
Is he still sending you checks for any reason?
All right.
Did he make any contribution to purchasing this vehicle?
Oh, of course not.
Then he's wrong.
He's wrong.
Yeah, he's wrong.
Excellent.
And, I mean, it's a pain in the neck, actually, because the truth is that when the temperature fluctuates wildly, as it does, I mean,
yes.
It goes from 60 degrees down to zero in a matter of a few days, then you're supposed to be adjusting your tire pressure.
No, I wouldn't bother.
Unless you don't care.
Who's going to do that?
No, I would set them at 30 on a day when it's 45 degrees.
Yeah.
And forget it.
I agree.
It'll go up a few pounds. The pressure will go up a little in the summer and down a little in the winter. And as long as you don't have any leaks, that'll be good enough.
I don't like 30, though. Because if it goes to 95 degrees, it's going to go up from 30 to 35.
That's okay.
That's a lot.
That's okay. That's good. It'll go even higher when you drive on the highway in the heat of the summer.
Yeah.
But that's okay, too.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Then you're not supposed to do anything.
Because it tells you the cold tire pressure on the tire, the maximum pressure, maybe 35 pounds.
Uh-huh.
As long as the cold tire pressure doesn't exceed the recommended pressure on the side of the sidewall of the tire, you're all right.
Yeah.
And tell your father he's wrong, and he can call us, and we'll straighten him out if need be.
Hey, this is like the first time in my life.
Ever. There'll be many more.
Yeah.
As I'm learning.
Yeah,
as I'm learning that your kids begin to have better insight into things than you do as you get older.
Well, they still go to school.
My kids correct me all the time.
See, when you stop going to school, I think you just get stupid. I stopped going to school 3 or 4 years ago.
Didn't you go to school, stupid?
And I came out the same way.
See you, Laura.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for calling, Laura.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Scott calling from Telluride, Colorado.
Scott.
Telluride.
How you doing, man?
Great. I've got a problem, though. Maybe you guys can help me solve a question I have.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I have to carpool with my wife to work.
Interesting.
Not by choice.
Uh-huh.
But when it snows out here and the roads get all ice-packed and full of snow, we drive together in our Ford pickup truck. Yeah. And when we go home at night, I take it out of four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I'll probably get 5 miles a gallon.
Okay.
And she constantly tells me to leave it in four-wheel drive when we go home because it brakes better. Well, when we drive home and we're going downhill, I keep telling her it doesn't have anything to do with a four-wheel drive.
No, it don't brake no better.
Very good, though.
However, we almost hit an elk, and then we didn't talk for 2 days after because I didn't have it in four-wheel drive.
Yeah, but on the way home, does that mean that the roads are less apt to be snow and ice covered? They're bare roads by this point?
Well, I mean, when we're going downhill, because Telluride's at 9,000 feet.
Yeah.
So when we're going home, I take it out of four-wheel drive because obviously we don't need it to get up the hill. So when we're going downhill, I take it out of four-wheel drive because... really, all you're doing is braking.
Oh, I get
now,
it now.
If it's in four-wheel drive, what difference does it make if you have to come to a sudden stop?
It doesn't.
Well, it doesn't. No, a sudden stop, nothing at all. Four-wheel drive will help you, however, slow down by downshifting, because it will slow down all four wheels,
right?
Which wouldn't be done if you were in two-wheel drive. So you do have that element of greater control in four-wheel drive, but if you're slamming on the brake,
right?
No. It makes no difference whether you're...
So I can just leave it the way it is.
I think so.
Well, it depends on your relationship with your wife.
That's, well, you're right. More important consideration.
Yeah. I mean, I
well,
have learned...
it's going to get better, because I told her if I was right, I wouldn't have to carpool with her anymore.
Yeah, but see...
Thomas...
I'm at a loss here.
Scott, how old are you, Scott?
I mean, how old are you?
Well, I'm 36 and she's 27, so we have all these problems in the car, like what radio station and whether we're going to stop for coffee, and it goes on all day long.
Well, I mean, the first rule, have you read Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, or whatever wherever they're from?
Oh, yeah, she read that.
Okay, she read it, see, but you didn't. But I have my own law of marriage, and it is more important to be happy than to be right. Now, you may know... that you're right. I mean, I'm always right. Whenever my wife and I have an argument, I'm always right. But being the clever fellow that I am, I never try to prove to her that I'm right. And she thinks that I'm a dummy because I'm always wrong. But she loves me.
Well, I'll tell you, everyone else thinks you're a dummy too. You know, a little secret.
But see, I know, as long as I know that I'm always right, I don't have to tell her that. So I would keep my mouth shut if I were you, Scott.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean,
leave the thing in four-wheel drive. It's not hurting anything to stay in four-wheel drive.
It does cut down on your mileage.
It's terrible in four-wheel drive.
No,
it
does cut down on your mileage. And on smooth roads, not smooth, but clean roads, you do not want to be in four-wheel drive. So if any large stretch of your drive is on clean roads, roads that are not snow and ice covered, you shouldn't be in four-wheel drive.
Okay, so here's the answer. This is a perfect win-win situation. You can explain to your wife. What's her name?
Carolyn.
You say, Carolyn, you know, I called Tom and Ray, and you won't believe this, but we're both right about this. Imagine that, because they told me that it should not be in four-wheel drive, but for a different reason.
Okay.
Not because of the braking, because
I mean,
it really doesn't make much difference to the braking, but it shouldn't be in four-wheel drive because you don't have good control if, in fact, there's no snow on the ground. So on clean road, so you're right, hon. You're right, hon. Trust me, you say that enough times, and you'll be happy.
Okay.
Yes, and practice saying this, yes, dear.
Yes, dear. Yes, dear is good, too.
Good luck, Scott.
Thanks a lot.
I'll be in divorce court in 6 months. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Judy.
Where are you from, Judy?
Pocatello, Idaho.
Hi, Judy.
Pocatello.
Hi.
Yeah, what's up?
I have a 91 Accord station wagon, and around fall, the hatchback started falling down. Whenever I would open it, it wouldn't stay up.
Yeah.
And so my husband ordered replacement. I think those are called, they're struts or something.
Pistons.
They're air compressed or something. And he ordered replacements for us. And they were expensive, and we neglected to go pick them up and sort of just lived with the hatchback falling down. And
you get good at holding it up with your head.
That's right.
While you take the grocery bags out of the back.
Right. Or the shoulder or whatever.
Yeah.
But sometime in the spring, suddenly, the hatchback started working again, and it would stay up just fine.
Yes.
And so all spring and summer, it worked fine, and we thought, well, it must have just been a fluke.
Until the cold weather came back.
Yes, and then October, it started happening again.
You started getting those lumps on your head.
Yes.
And you wonder why.
I do wonder why, and I wonder, even if we get these replacement parts, whether or not we'll still have the problem.
No, you won't.
Okay.
No, what's happened is the pistons that are in there have leaked out. What's in there is a gas under pressure.
Okay.
So when you open the the trunk, the pistons hold the thing up because this gas under pressure is pushing the rods out.
All right.
And then in order to close it, you must overcome this and compress that gas.
Okay.
Which fortunately is compressible.
Yeah. But fortunately, the weight of the hatchback is not enough to compress it. If everything's working right.
All right.
But when some leaks out, the weight is enough and the thing will either close very quickly or usually close very slowly at first. When the warm weather came, the increased temperature increased the pressure.
Okay.
Because if we remember our high school chemistry.
I do.
You should never remember our high school chemistry. But as you increase the pressure, as you increase the temperature, the pressure goes up. So the thing worked all right in the spring and the summer and part of the fall. And then the cold weather came and you didn't have enough pressure. Now if you're parked
PV
in the sun.
PV equals NRT.
Something like that.
I don't remember that much.
I don't either. I made it up.
Okay, so if I do get the replacements, then it
they'll
should
work. They'll
work,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Because they will not have leaked like
well,
yours did.
The boys at the grocery store are going to appreciate this.
See you, Judy.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, Tommy, do you remember last week's puzzle?
Do I remember last week's puzzle? Come on.
Not if your life depended on it, huh?
No.
Well, it's about a traveling salesman and his altitude. Yes, his altitude. And I'll have the story in just a minute.
Still don't remember it.
I didn't think so.
I danced the whole night long at my high school reunion. Sang my new hit song at my high school reunion. So nothing could go wrong at my high school reunion. But heading out the door, they saw my Plymouth Belvedere. Plymouth Belvedere, yeah, a Plymouth Belvedere. Rusty, broken down, that car is killing my career. But to give it up would devastate my poor old daddy dear. So I've got to keep on driving that Plymouth Belvedere.
And even though Goldilocks wonders who's been messing with her radio's presets whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo explains the importance of creating a safe space for therapy.
I can't tell you how many times I've had clients that say that expression, like, I've never told that to anybody. That's when I know I've made some kind of momentous move with this person. They feel safe enough to expose that part of themselves, and doing that together with somebody else can be very powerful.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/cartalk.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from TracFone Wireless, offering unlimited talk and text smartphone plans for as low as $20 a month with no contract. And with unlimited carryover data, you can keep what you don't use. All these benefits for a phone on America's largest and most dependable networks. Get high-quality smartphones at a great price. Learn more at TracFone.com. That's TracFone.com. TracFone Wireless. Now you're in control.
Here at Planet Money Industries, we've manufactured T-shirts, we've bought oil, we've even gone to space. But our next Planet Money series, well, let's just say a superhero is born. Coming to a podcast feed near you from NPR.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler, and here it is.
Yeah.
This is a puzzler about a traveling salesman, a guy who sells nuts and bolts.
Mm.
He was telling a story about when he was first a salesman, like 30 years ago, and he must have done something awful. Because for all those years, he's been assigned to the territory that includes towns like Moose Jaw, Maine, and Freeze Your Butt, New Hampshire. Way up in the northern tier, you know.
Yeah.
Now, when he's traveling, he often finds himself looking for cheap motels, and he began to notice a disturbing trend.
Hmm.
When he would stop at these motels, oftentimes the owner slash clerk would have him fill out that little card with their name, address, you know, in case you leave in the middle of the night, they can try to track you down.
Yeah, as though you're going to, if you were planning to do that, you'd put down your real name and address.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe you would by mistake, you know, force of habit. And on some of these cards, he was asked for his occupation. And when he filled in salesman, he was always assigned a room on the second floor, if there was a second floor.
Wow.
So I asked him, why do they always put salesmen on the second floor? Does it have anything to do with the kind of car you drove? And he said, well, at the time, I would say so. He said, I was driving a VW. And when he gave me that piece of information, I knew the answer.
So driving a VW
has... You got to look for all the little hints. It was like 30 years ago. He's a salesman. He drives a lot. He's concerned about getting what now? Come on. Come on, you can do it,
gasoline.
Tommy. Gasoline. Yeah, he's concerned about getting good, what? Mileage.
Mileage. Yeah.
So he buys himself a Volkswagen, but not just any old Volkswagen. He buys himself the car that gets the best mileage. He buys himself a Volkswagen diesel. And because he's in Moose Jaw, Maine, and freeze your butt, New Hampshire, in the wintertime, he's got to plug the thing in overnight. Otherwise, it won't start. And the reason they put him on the second floor all the time is so they could see the extension cord that he had run from his motel room to his car. And they would unplug it on him in the middle of the night. So if you were a salesperson plying your trade at that time,
boy,
you often got unplugged.
That's gotta be about the worst answer I've. I mean, that was impossible to figure out.
All the hints were there. Started selling nuts and bolts 30 years ago, cold part of the country.
Hint? You call those hints?
Well, I had to obfuscate and, you know.
You call those hints?
Well, I got it. When he Volkswagen. No, huh?
Oh, brother.
Hey.
That's beautiful. Even though we didn't have any winners, we had to choose.
We did have a winner this week.
Because we chose from among all the losers.
Well, this was the guy that actually was the salesman.
That's how he did it. Yeah. Oh, he's the guy who was telling the story.
He's the
only one who knew the answer.
Well,
and his name is Scott Kunzel. He's from Crete.
Nebraska.
Oh, Crete, Nebraska. Is he a Cretan? And for having his incorrect answer chosen from among all the other incorrect answers that we got this week, Scott will get a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can get our best-selling marriage counseling tape, Men Are From GM, Women Are From Ford, which is all calls about couples and cars, guaranteed to put any relationship on ice.
We'll have a new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. A new puzzler.
New puzzler. It'll be as good as this one?
Oh, better. In the meantime, we'll take your calls at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Barb.
Barb.
Hi.
Hi, Barb. Barb Dwyer?
No.
Barb Dwyer was our head of security for a while.
Oh, no, that wouldn't be me.
Where are you from, Barb?
I'm from Richfield, Minnesota. It's just outside Minneapolis.
Man. How cold is it?
It's not too bad.
No, it's not cold. It's global warming, man. The whole planet is about to melt.
It's not too bad, huh? That's great.
Yeah, and actually, the trouble we're having with our car, we like it to be cold because the car seems to work better when it's really cold.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's unusual.
You might have inadvertently purchased the Klondike package. When you bought the car.
What's it doing?
Well, it's a 1990 Plymouth Acclaim, and it just dies for apparently no reason. You're just driving along, and all of a sudden the check engine light comes on, and there's no power.
Cool.
And
that could be touch and go if you're on the highway at 75 miles an hour.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
So we took it to the garage, and they thought maybe it was a fuel line or fuel pump, and it wasn't. And then they didn't have any more ideas for us. Their next suggestion was, well, we could take the whole engine apart, but we don't know what the problem might be.
Oh.
And we didn't really like that idea.
So. I don't like that either.
And how many times has this happened?
It's been going on for 2 months now.
And how often? Like every time you go out?
Well, the strangest thing is it's the third trip of the day that does it. It's like you can go someplace and come back, but if you try to go someplace a third time, that's when it happens.
Ah, maybe it's some kind of safety feature trying to get you to stay home.
That's right, or trying to make us more efficient. I don't know. But
yeah.
Right.
Why didn't you buy the milk on the last trip?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Now, when it does this, does it restart?
Well, yeah, if we, you know, pull over to the side and put on the blinkers and sit there for a few minutes and then start it again, it's fine, and it's running smooth.
For how long?
Well, sometimes it'll die again pretty soon, but usually, you know, you can finish what you're doing and get home.
You must have 130,000 miles on this car.
More.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's an old car and it's been through the wars.
Yeah, so what do you want?
I want it to keep running because it's the only one we've got.
Well, the most likely candidate on this thing is the fuel pump.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, when they said that the fuel pump and the fuel lines were okay, on what basis did they say that?
That the car was running the day you took it in.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. It wouldn't do it at the garage.
Well, it may not have done it, but at the very least, they should have hooked up the fuel pressure gauge to it, because very often, a pump that fails like this intermittently will exhibit low fuel pressure.
Okay.
Which is a telltale sign that it's what's the technical word?
Done for.
Yeah.
Done for.
So, in fact, if it is the original pump, it's a miracle that it's still working.
Yeah.
Well, they may be looking for something in the wrong place. I mean, I think I mentioned a few weeks ago that mechanics, for whatever reason nowadays, except for the geezers, go and look at all the computer stuff because they assume that that's what it is. But the same things that have gone wrong with cars since the days of Ben-Hur still go wrong with cars. Fuel pumps still give out. Intake manifold gaskets leak. You know, things, and all those
None
things,
of which are on the computer.
Yeah, see, we used to have a geezer to fix our car, and then he retired.
Ah,
I thought
man.
That was really inconsiderate of him.
We need to bring the geezers back.
That's right.
Was he in, a rest home someplace?
Well, yeah, you know, we could track him down.
Does he have his tools?
But I suggest it's the fuel pump.
I agree with my bro on this one.
Okay, and we had noticed that it seems to be temperature dependent. On really cold, dry days, it doesn't do it.
Well, the failing pump is more apt to fail when the weather gets warm. So when the spring comes, like in July,
you'll be done for.
It'll be conking out every day, and those dopes will be able to figure it out for you.
Well, yeah, it'll finally do it.
But have them check the pressure first. I think they're going to find out the pump's no good.
Okay, the fuel pressure. Thank you.
See ya, Barb.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
So
bye-bye.
July in Minnesota is spring.
Well,
12th through 14th.
Yeah, that's the official last day of ice fishing season.
Yeah, okay. Want me to read some mail to you?
Not really. No. if you insist.
This is kind of cute.
Go ahead.
Talking about email. It's wise to remember how easily this wonderful technology can be misused. Consider the case of an Illinois man who left the snow-filled streets of Chicago for a vacation in Florida. His wife was on a business trip and was planning to meet him there the next day. When he reached the hotel, he decided to send his wife a quick email message. But he couldn't find the scrap of paper on which he had written her email address. He did his best to remember it, and he typed it in from memory. Unfortunately, he missed it by one letter.
Oh, kiss of death.
And the note was directed instead to somebody else who happened to be an elderly preacher's wife whose husband had died the day before.
No, I can see it.
So coming. The grieving widow is checking her email, and she takes one look at the monitor. She screams and falls to the floor in a dead faint. Somebody runs over and looks on the screen and sees this note. Dearest wife, just got checked in. Everything prepared for your arrival tomorrow. Love, your husband. Excellent, huh? It doesn't take much to get yourself in a lot of trouble.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Art in Dover, New Hampshire.
Art!
Yeah.
A-H-T, right?
Yeah.
Some week we should have an all-New England call-in.
No, that's a good idea.
Dover's right close to the Massachusetts border, isn't it?
Well, more closer to Maine than Massachusetts, down by Portsmouth, just a little bit up from Portsmouth.
Ah, yeah, I've been there, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have the correctional facility there.
Yeah, that's where Art's calling from.
It's called City Hall. Yeah.
So what's up?
Well, we don't really have a problem, just more or less a question. Yeah. My wife took her Honda Accord in for our usual biannual oil change and oil filter change.
Yeah.
And she's driving home, and this was last August. The car had about 23,000 miles on it, and we're only about 2.5 miles from the auto dealer and the Honda dealer.
And the light came on.
And the red light came on.
Yeah.
And she drove all the way home with it. at about 30 to 40 miles an hour.
Yep.
We got home, we called the dealer, and they sent the mechanic right over that worked on the car.
Yeah, with four quarts of oil.
Four quarts of oil.
And a new filter.
Filter and the plug. The drain plug, which he still had in his toolbox.
Well, not quite that bad, but he had put 3.5 quarts in. But we had about a half a quart in there. But we were using Mobil 1, I don't know if I can say that, or a synthetic oil.
Yeah, no, Mobil 1's good. You can say that.
Edit that out in any case, anyway.
This is public radio art. You can say anything you want, man.
Okay. But we had talked to somebody afterwards and he had wondered whether at some point down the line there could be some potential damage that was caused by that lack of oil for that short period of time.
Well, it actually lost 3 quarts of oil.
And a half.
3.5 quarts of oil.
Yeah, the guy only put that. What happened was the mechanic was refilling the oil,
Put
only about a half a quart in and got distracted to got called to another car or whatever in the shop and forgot to put the rest of it in.
Oh, that's even worse.
That's too bad.
That's even worse. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why it's worse.
Yeah. You're laughing, Art. This is going to cost
you. It's his wife's car. What does he care? No, if the guy had put in the 4 quarts and they had leaked out over the course of the trip from the shop to your house,
right.
It would have meant for maybe a lot of the trip, you would have had at least 3 quarts, or then 2.5, and then 2.
Exactly.
But you started off
with a half a quart.
With a half a quart, and I'm surprised the light wasn't on as soon as she drove out.
It probably
was on immediately the whole time.
Oh, yeah. It was. And why did she continue to drive it?
Ladies with cars that drive cars, they don't know what they're doing.
They don't know what they're doing.
No, because my neighbor Frank did exactly the same thing. That moron. His light came on, and he drove 10 miles, figuring I don't want to get stuck on the highway. I'd rather melt my engine.
How far did she drive?
It's only about 2.5 miles. At about 30 to 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And, but to come to my wife's defense, to her credit, she kept her eye on the temperature gauge to make sure it wasn't going to overheat.
Oh, that was very good.
That's good. I give her credit for that.
Well, this is a word of warning to everyone to whom this could potentially happen. When that light comes on, you should shut the engine off as soon as it's safe to do so.
Right.
So if you're on the highway at 60, as soon as you can get off into the breakdown lane or drive over the median strip or whatever is required of you, do it and shut the motor down.
Well, that's what Frank did. It wasn't safe until he was in his driveway.
And Art's wife didn't think so either. Maybe she was driving through some bad neighborhood. So I guess if you put it in that light, then maybe, in fact, she did the right thing. But the truth is that seconds count when you have no oil pressure.
Right. And this engine is now garbage.
Well, maybe not.
Oh, yeah.
You had Mobil 1 in there, which is a superb lubricant. She wasn't driving at high speed, but it's too bad that she didn't.
Yeah.
What would have happened? Now, obviously, the dealership says, no problem, no charge for the 3.5 quarts of oil because, what, you already paid for them.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They put the oil in, and they sent you home with a giggle and a slap in the back saying, well, everything's going to be all right. Don't worry about it.
And everything is all right now.
What happened?
The car seems to be running fine, and we've gone to another, we've got up to 27,900. We don't put that many miles on the car.
Right, but what happens a year from now when this engine has a bearing noise? And you start it up, and it goes, you go back to this dealership, and they're going to say, oh, look, we can't possibly be responsible, because if anything we did caused this, it would have happened right away. And the answer to that is baloney.
Yeah. Unfortunately, at the time that it happened, you had to have not allowed the guy to put in the extra 3.5 quarts, call your lawyer immediately. He laughs. And you would have a new engine now.
Oh, dear.
Well, the best thing that could have happened, if you would live 10 more miles away, your wife wouldn't have made it.
That's right.
And it would have melted the engine, and then they would have been forced to give you a new engine. So when you realize what was going on, you should have kept driving.
Yeah, because you're in a rotten place now. I mean, you've got something that happened 5 months ago, mm-hmm. 6 months ago, whatever it was, and no evidence that anything happened. These guys will probably deny it all anyway now.
So, in fact, your wife was right to disregard the light.
She was absolutely right.
Okay.
Because even driving out of the
parking
lot.
So you take back your advice to Frank and you don't want to call him a moron anymore.
No, it depends on whether or not you can blame someone else for it. if you can blame someone else.
Yeah. And she knew that. She had just come from Jiffy Lube or wherever the hell these jerks
were. She then possessed the wisdom that allowed her to drive with
that's
the light on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's a smart gal.
Gotta hand it to her.
How'd she get stuck with you?
No. She liked the way he laughs.
You have a great laugh, Art.
Well, good luck. I don't think there's a damn thing you can do about it now.
Oh, dear.
But
pray, huh?
Well, hope for the best.
Thanks for your call, okay. Alan. Don't ever lose that laugh.
Okay, I'll try not to.
Love it.
All right.
See,
Art. All
right. Oh, Art. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
All right, Tommy, it's that time of the show again.
Is this the part where the underwriters pull out, the station managers resign, and the staff begs for an overnight shift? Is
that no, that part? Usually happens in the first half. Is this time for us to take a little station break?
All right, we'll be back with a brand new puzzler in just a moment. How's that?
We will.
Keep your eyes on the road. Hold the wheel at 10 and 2. Click and tug your seatbelt snug. You'll live longer if you do. Watch your speed, signposts heed. Remember when you drive Dad's truck to keep those round black things down and keep that shiny side up. Hold her straight, don't tailgate. Smooth and steady as she goes. Why the way some numbskulls drive, you had best be on your toes. Give it gas when you pass, but be careful not to push your luck. Keep those round black things down, keep that shiny side up. My best advice is always drive defensive. Broken bones and crumpled fenders are expensive.
And even though ice fishermen kick their radios into the nearest hole whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
This message comes from NPR and Car Talk sponsor CarMax. Finding the right car takes time, and with the new Love Your Car guarantee from CarMax, you can take your time to make sure you found the perfect car for you. Starting with a 24-hour test drive. Drive it to work, school, and the grocery store before you buy, and if it feels right, you've got a full month and 1,500 miles to keep on driving with their new 30-day money-back guarantee. Learn more at the new Love Your Car guarantee from CarMax at CarMax.com.
There is so much Black excellence in the sciences that we want to celebrate. So in honor of Black History Month, all this week, Shortwave is featuring conversations with Black scientists and educators, people doing incredible work and pushing for a world where science serves everyone. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to discuss, of course, cars, car repair, And the new puzzler. Now, yeah. I've had to use the same M.O. on this puzzler that I've used, maximum obfuscation, that I've used many times before. Okay. You may have to help me.
Yeah, I'll help you. I'll jump right in. Go
All
ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
Long, long ago, when he was just a lad, our erstwhile producer, Dougie Berman, Ooh. Had three girlfriends.
At the same time?
This is before he was married, I think. I
no. Oh.
He had three girlfriends, and he would juggle them, so to speak. On Monday, he would visit one. On Tuesday, another. On Wednesday, the third one. And then he'd repeat the process. Thursday, he'd visit number one again, and then number two, et cetera, et cetera. And each time he would make one of these visits, he would drive his car. But before he could drive the car, because it was a junker, he had to go through a little ritual. He would open the hood. And he'd have to top up the coolant because he leaked coolant.
Yeah.
He had to top up the power steering fluid. That leaked too.
Mm-hmm.
He had to fill up the oil because he was burning oil like crazy. Blew smoke out of the tailpipe.
Yeah. Brake fluid?
And no, I don't think he needed any brake fluid.
Transmission fluid? No.
Are you helping or hindering?
I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to obfuscate as much as possible.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
Closes the hood, drives to girlfriend one number one's house, and he follows the same procedure every time. He pulls into the driveway, and then he drives as far into the woods as he can,
so
the other girlfriends won't see his jalopy, which is, you know, quite distinguishable.
Yeah.
And he does this for girlfriend number one, and then on Tuesday for girlfriend number two, and on Wednesday, girlfriend number three. But when he pulls into girlfriend number three's driveway, an interesting thing happens. Fire erupts under the hood. The thing bursts into flames.
Wow.
At which point, he jumps out of the car, removes his pants, and beats out the flames.
Yeah.
And then when the thing has finally subsided, he stashes the car, goes to her house, and tries to explain to her parents why he's coming to meet her with no pants on. So this goes on and on. Girlfriend number one, no problem. Number two, no problem. But every time he visits girlfriend number three, same problem. The car catches fire under the hood. He can't explain it. He takes this as an omen.
Yeah.
And dumps the other two girlfriends and keeps girlfriend number three, because any girl that can set his pants on fire is going to be worth sticking around with.
Yeah.
Right?
I go with it. I'm with it.
So now you have all of the facts, as obfuscated as they may be.
Yeah.
What is it embedded here in this little narrative?
So the question is, how long is it going to take his wife to find out about girlfriend number three? Is that the question?
So to speak.
That's the question. I got it. I say she's going to find out about 10 minutes after we leave the studio.
So what is it about his visit to girlfriend number three, knowing what you know and only what you know, that causes this conflagration under the hood and ultimately in his pants? So
wow.
If you think you know the answer or just have nothing better to do at work, mail your answer to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238, or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. If you want to call us, call right now. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Liesl from Wheaton, Illinois.
Who?
Liesl D's.
Liesl.
Liesl, rhymes with diesel.
You spell it the same way?
It's L-I-E-S-L, no other E.
No.
Now, I would pronounce that Liesl.
No, then it would rhyme with weasel.
Well, it also rhymes with diesel.
Liesl is good.
So anyway, Liesl D's, what's on your mind?
I have an 89 Honda Civic station wagon that won't start. It's got about 115,000 miles on it, and my husband is the automotive person in the family, and I'm the idiot. But yeah.
What you make him think, right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, no.
You got it all figured out.
That's right. Well, he went to the library to look up what to do with the car, and I called you guys.
Ah.
Yeah, see? And he thinks that you're the idiot.
That's right. Well, it's turning over, but it won't start. Mm-hmm. And I started the car for him, and he looked under the hood, and there's no spark. So he says it's probably an electrical thing, could be something like the distributor. And the only precursor we have to this is that he changed the oil the other day and didn't change the oil filter, but then we didn't use the car for a couple of days. And when he went to start it, it wouldn't start. So he checked under the hood. The oil looked a little high, so he drained a little bit out and got it back down to the proper level, but now it won't start. And we're moving on Saturday, and we really need our car.
To move.
Right.
Yeah. So you're moving next Saturday. You need the car.
Right. Well, and we haven't taken it in yet because, of course, it has to be towed to get into the shop to see what's wrong with it.
Well, I mean, I can think of some awful things that it could be.
Okay.
Would you like the worst of the things that it could be?
Give it to me. We're buying a house. What can be worse than mortgage payment?
That you're going to be buying a car to.
Okay.
The worst thing, how many miles are on this car?
It's 115,000.
115,000. Like you said that.
I already wrote it down, too.
Okay.
I would assume that at some point in the recent past, you changed the timing belt, but maybe you didn't. Maybe you were too busy out
looking at houses.
Hunting.
Right. Now, I don't know if we did that or
not.
Well,
if you didn't, it's very possible that the oil change, of course, had nothing to do with anything. We know that. It's very possible that the timing belt is broken.
Okay.
And that's the reason it won't start, because even though the pistons are going up and down, the valves aren't opening and closing, and that's why you have no spark, because the timing belt drives the camshaft, which drives the distributor on this car.
Let's not even consider that possibility.
Consider it. I think we have to give this strong consideration, because I just have an intuitive feel that this is what it is.
Well, wait a minute.
Not all is lost. You would have the moving truck tow the car over there.
This happened sitting in the driveway?
Yes, why not?
It's in the garage.
In the garage.
Yeah, better yet.
Of course it could happen anytime.
It could happen anytime.
If the timing belt is broken, wouldn't we see that?
No. You wouldn't. The timing belt is
inside.
Is housed.
Okay.
And that's good. Housed is good.
Housed is good.
Yeah. So you may be done for. Now, are you and your husband willing to experiment a little bit with this?
Certainly.
Okay. You have to remove the distributor cap, which on this car is held on by a couple of screws.
Right.
Which are inaccessible because the battery's in the way.
Right.
But once you figure out, you will take those two little screws out and remove the distributor cap.
Okay.
That's the thing to which the spark plug wires are attached.
Okay.
Then
you just lift it up out of the way.
Yeah. Okay. Then one of you will turn the key.
Yes.
And the other will notice if the rotor, the thing that's attached to the shaft of this distributor, is turning.
If it's not.
If it isn't, you're done for. You're done for.
Okay.
Because when the belt breaks on this car, you bend the valves in most cases.
Okay.
So
in which case, you're done for.
Okay.
Well, when you applied for the mortgage, did you get a few extra thousand to, you know, in case something else happens to the house?
That's right.
You can apply that to the car.
Pretend that the car was in the house at the time.
Yeah. I would think so, yeah. I would think so. Now, if that isn't the case, if you're lucky and the rotor is turning,
okay,
then it's probably what's called the igniter.
Okay.
The igniter is the little electronic black box which actually manufactures in conjunction with the coil.
The spark.
Okay.
So it could be the igniter.
Let's shoot for that.
Okay. I would shoot for the igniter.
If it's the igniter, how would we know that?
Well, you wouldn't really know it. I mean, you could guess if this other test is positive.
Or you could just fake it and make believe that you didn't call us.
Okay.
And say to your husband, Frank, or is his name Frankel?
Dave.
Davel. Say, Davel, I think it's the igniter.
Okay.
And he'll go down to the little auto parts store, buy an igniter, put it in, and lo and behold, the thing starts, and then he won't think you're an idiot about cars anymore.
He'll think I'm psychic and love me for the rest of my life.
He'll
think you're absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
But, gee, you know, I'm thinking you should really have a diesel.
No, thanks. Not in this weather. Are there any other possibilities?
You don't want to know what they are.
Okay. They're
dead. They're bad.
You didn't even want to know about the timing belt one, as a matter of fact. Just remember igniter.
Okay. I'll pretend I only know about the igniter.
Yeah. Go for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for that. That's cheaper. Good luck, Liesl.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Thanks.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello. You're on Car Talk.
This is Topher Bill from Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Topher Bill.
Topher, T-O-P-H-E-R.
I wrote that down.
It's the end of Christopher.
Topher.
Topher Bill. Oh, it's the end of Christopher.
Topher.
Yes, I'm otherwise known as the father of Becca Bill.
It's the end of Rebecca.
Yeah, you talked with her a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, we did?
About her anal retentive father.
Oh!
Me.
You're the guy with the little book.
I am the guy with the little book.
We should remind people that Becca called us a couple of weeks ago, and she told us that her father had this practice of keeping a little book in the glove compartment, and that every time he got gas or did anything to the car, he made a notation in this logbook, and he insisted that she, Becca, do the same, and it was making her nuts. And if I remember, we suggested to her that she tell you to take this book and stuff it. And that she had to make a clean break with you because you were controlling her life.
You even had the nerve to predict what kind of a car this anal retentive guy had, and you said it was a Honda Civic.
And were we right?
No, it's an Accord.
Oh, coming up in the world.
Actually, we own three Accords, but the one in question, the one that I bought and gave to Becca, is a 90 Accord.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. This all started with me with an 81 Datsun.
That would do it.
I bought it. It was my first little car. I decided to see what kind of mileage it got.
Yeah.
It was the world's most miserable car. I had it 60,000 miles. It averaged 18 miles a gallon, which I, you know, was able to figure from the little book. I then went out and bought a bigger car. I have kept the little book on that and another one since then, the one that Becca has, but I've never actually figured it up. I was so incensed at the garbage mileage I got out of the Datsun that I wanted to know. If I wanted to have the data, if I wanted to ever compute it, but
so you have all this raw data. Are you saving this for like your memoirs?
Well, when I traded in the Datsun, I put the book under the rug with a note. Hey, sucker! Here's what you got.
Right, you'll find this.
Topher.
Right after I've cashed your check.
Do you have other areas of your life where this anal retentiveness exhibits itself?
Yeah, I mean, I do research. Data is a thing.
Data are it. Right.
Well, there's another piece of this. I own a fleet of vehicles. I have an 86 Celebrity that has 150,000 miles on it because it's been well taken care of, and I do keep track of all the repairs and everything. So
it's your belief that you can't take care of a car well unless you have the book. I mean, the book.
Well, I think it helps you to monitor the car.
Yeah, well, yeah. We certainly agree. The only thing I disagreed with, I certainly have no problem with your doing it. However, you're imposing it on your daughter as some kind of a precondition for financial assistance.
Yeah, well, it is my car.
Oh, you said you gave her the car.
Well, she. Well, okay. All right.
Either you gave her the car.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. Now, she just finished school. The idea was that when she finished school, I would give her a car. I wasn't quite sure what car it would be at that point.
Yeah.
And then it would be up to her.
So let's get down to it. Did you give her this car or didn't you? Did you give her the car or didn't you?
Well, she's using it now, but she will be, as she told you, she's taking a job in Atlanta and will start there in about a month, and then she'll be in Atlanta
with
the car.
Would Your Honor please instruct the witness to answer the question?
You're waffling on this, Topher.
Did
you give it? Now you say she's using the car. Whose car is it?
It will be hers when she moves to Atlanta. It'll be hers by default, because then she'll be there, and then it will be there, and I can't watch it.
Okay, so you still haven't actually given it to her.
Well, she doesn't want it, because then she'd have to insure it.
Gotcha.
Oh, but she would be exempt, I'm led to understand, from the book at that point. She would be excused once she takes ownership of the car.
Yeah, you called her brother a wuss
Oh, yeah, we did that too, didn't we?
I sent him a copy of the tape, so you might be hearing from him too.
So the deal is that right now the car belongs to you because you're, in fact, paying for the insurance, and therefore you have every right in your mind, small though it may be, you have every right in your mind to dictate that she fill out the book.
Absolutely.
Okay, and I guess there's no argument there. But, I mean, the minute she leaves to go to Atlanta, give the kid a break. I mean, come on.
When she hits Spotsylvania, which is 5 miles south of here, she's exempt.
Yeah.
I will call her on her car phone.
If you follow her for 5 miles, you'll find that book lying in the street someplace. Guaranteed.
I don't think the book is in there anymore.
No, it would be interesting to find out how far from the house does she get before heaves that damn thing out the window. I want to know.
She and the book are in Florida now, basking in the sun, getting ready for a life's work.
Yeah, she's slow to get to it, huh?
And I doubt if she's writing in the book. Actually, she hasn't written anything in the book since your conversation.
Yeah, good. Well, she's...
But I haven't put any gas in it either.
She's rebelling.
The magic gas.
Yeah, you got to cut the knot somewhere along the way.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Toph, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Well, it's been fun. I've been looking for an excuse to call you guys for the last 5 or 6 years, but I keep such good care of my cars that nothing
ever
needs
breaks.
Your attention.
And what's your son's name so we can be on guard if he calls?
Jason,
okay. See ya.
See you later.
Bye.
Well, it's happened again. You vaporized another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Dakar Fine Cigar, Caviar, Steak Tartare, Heath Bar, and Malomar Supper Car, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin Overa. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our parts inventory manager is Wayne DeBack. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is O Takashawa. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne Diaz. Our Russian chauffeur is Pekov and Dropov. And our staff tailor, of course, is you, Jess. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is you, Louis Dewey. Known to the professors moonlighting is ice sculptures in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, subscribe to our weekly podcast, and check out our agita-inducing clothing and best-of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week,
how to skip the whole trade-in charade and donate your used car to benefit your public radio station. Instead, it's the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
But the haggling over the trade-in is my favorite part.
Oh, yeah. Twice now you've gotten them up from 50 cents to a dollar.
Check out the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. For more info, go to cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR staff has passed through the stages of denial, anger, depression, and acceptance, then go back to denial again whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.